Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to the Iron Men and Women of the American Drug-Free Powerlifting Federation. I'm Bill Sias, along with Mike Stagg. We are respectively the Vice President and President of the ADFPF. This is the official ADFPF podcast where you can get information about our organization, as well as information on strength and how to be a better powerlifter. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/ADFPF. You can also check out everything you need to know on our website at ADFPF.net. Tonight, we're going to discuss how to hold a meet and what you can expect from the ADFPF in holding a meet. So let me just start a little more informally than that implies. The first step typically is, with most meets, is an email to me. And that's typically followed by a couple of phone calls back and forth. If it looks like you're really interested and you really want to go, that's followed by a sanction form and a zip file called the Meet Director's Toolkit. The Meet Director's Toolkit contains pretty much everything you need and everything you need to know about running a powerlifting meet. As I scan at it right now, there are 23 items in the toolkit, starting with a Read This First checklist. It includes the sanction form that you didn't fill out. We'll come back to that. Copies of the ADFPF logos, templates for all of the documents that you need, a sample poster that you can either just modify with your data or use as a template, sample entry form templates for full power, single event, push-pull, combination meets with single event and full power, instructions on how to write a press release, information on check-in, a copy of the current insurance certificate. We'll come back to that. Meet entry forms and release from liability for competition workers and the entry form template. Pretty much all the paperwork required to successfully run a meet. The long and short of it is once you and I have discussed it and we agree on a date and we start to put things together, that's when things get interesting. And there's a bunch of work on both sides. You want to add anything to that, Mike?
Yeah, I think the first thing that I would kind of like to address is the one, I think it's both a problem with someone running a meet the first time and also maybe a perceived problem with first-time meet directors. And what I mean by that, whenever I have somebody hold a meet the first time, they oftentimes don't really understand what that entails. They either believe that they're going to basically put an entry form out and then the ADFPF is going to come in and run the meet and just pay them money, or they have very, very grandiose ideas about running a big meet and how much money they're going to make on it and all of this. So, you know, my caution with first-time meet directors is, number one, it's probably not as difficult as you think it is. And number two, it's probably not as profitable as you think it is. However, having said that, I've done this a lot. Bill's done this a lot. We don't ever lose money on a meet. We always, at least break even. We don't, as a nonprofit, we really don't strive ourselves personally to make money at it. We would like to see meet directors do okay for their time. But I think it's really helpful that if a meet director takes our advice, lets us handle things, we know how to manage awards. We know that most lifters don't like to to enter until it's really late, and just a lot of things that we are used to that I don't think a first-time meet director is expecting. And as a general rule, you probably – the single biggest problem I see with a first-time meet director is they underestimate the volunteers they need to help load and spot and things like that, and they overestimate how many people are actually going to enter the meet the first time. Anything for you to add, Bill?
Boy, that you've hit it right on the head. I run, as you mentioned, I run a lot of meets, so do you. I'm going to be upfront and tell you I've never had a meet that I didn't make money on. I've never had a meet where I thought, goodness gracious, look at all the money I made. It ends up being a lot of work for a small amount of money. But with you and I, it's not about the money. It's about continuing to contribute to the sport. I get a number of people that come to me a little late. They've already decided they're going to have a meet. They've decided it's going to be an ADFPF meet. They've rented a venue, and then they call me up and want to set it up. I had one person, there are going to be no names in any of my examples, who had already spent $450 on a venue before he even had permission to run a meet. That's kind of backwards. Get us involved early, and we can help you with that. I think you implied this, there are a lot of folks who come in and think that they've been in a lot of meets, so they know how to do it better than we do, and they discover there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes that they never thought about. Again, it's not rocket surgery, but it helps to have a little experience.
Well, Bill, as you've talked about that a lot, but one of the things we talked about wanting the meet directors to have some realistic expectations. At the same time, I don't want them to have unrealistic expectations, but I don't want to make it scarier than it sounds either to a first-time meet director. So maybe you can talk about the kind of help that the ADFPF will typically give a first-time meet director or somebody that doesn't have the level of experience running a meet as some of our more experienced directors do.
Sure. Typically, the amount of help that I provide ranges anywhere from making sure your back office runs correctly through to providing competition plates. I decided a couple of years ago that I would no longer bring along warm-up plates. And in addition, I no longer have warm-up plates that I'm willing to haul around. The biggest part is helping along the way, making sure that you're making the right decisions, making the right purchases, not doing things out of sequence. The sort of volunteers you need is, you need some guys who are going to load all day. I tend to think that with a first meet, you should keep it small, certainly under 30. And for that, I always plan that we need to have six people loading and spotting. That allows for some breaks and makes it easy. You also need two or three people to run the desk. Normally, I come in with laptop and projector and train your people how to run the software. If they're untrainable, I do it myself. That takes care of all of the timing of who's up next and the score sheet as we go along. So again, it can range everywhere from we come in and do pretty much everything for you other than providing the warm-up plates and volunteers, to we just come along and make sure things are going well. If you're well experienced, we're just simply available for any sort of help that you need. Did I cover that?
And so, Bill, if the ADFPF does come in, and let's say we've got a meet director that says, hey, I've got a venue, I've got the warm-up equipment, what I need is competition equipment, I need to know form I'll do it, and I'll provide volunteers. Financially, what would you typically ask in return if you have to coordinate everything else?
Typically, I don't charge anything to do all of that. There's a $20 meet sanction fee that the Federation gets. If I have to travel a long distance bringing the equipment, I will sometimes charge mileage, sometimes I won't. It depends on the meet director. If it's your absolute first one, I'm going to do my very best to make sure that you make a profit and that all of your lifters are really happy.
I believe in some cases when the ADFPF actually runs a meet, I know there's been instances where the ADFPF says we will split all of the income after expenses with the meet director if we have to really provide everything except spotters. I know we've done that on a few occasions.
Yeah, and that's true. And if that makes the meet director more comfortable, I jump in and offer that immediately. If you go back through past meet announcements, you'll discover there are a lot of meets that list me as co-director, and that's typically what's happened in that case. The person wants a lot of help, and if I'm going to put in that amount of time, then we're going to run it together.
Okay, so now if somebody does want to run a meet, and what type of advice do we give? I know there's some restrictions on the type of equipment, but let's start with the competition equipment itself. We see all of our records are in kilos and all of this. What if somebody has the right kind of, they've got a bar that meets competition standards, they can build a platform, but they don't have access to kilo plates, and the distance is far enough that me or you are not going to haul kilo plates to them?
Sure. At that point, it's not against the rules to run a meet in pounds. The final reporting, however, is done in kilos. And if you go back, I think I wrote an article on this for the website a while back on how to be a lifter at a pound based meet. But if you've got high quality plates, typically what I'll do is when I come in and bring the scale, because no one owns a proper scale, I weigh a few to make sure that they are correct within tolerances. And then when we do the final results, they're converted to kilos. Again, I'm going to refer you back to that article on the website for how that's done, because it's not just a matter of dividing by 2.2046. And that's pretty much it. If you've got high quality plates, you probably don't require me to load up my truck full of Alico competition equipment.
You touched on something there, Bill, that reminds me, and this is something I would really encourage meet directors, even for ourselves. We oftentimes ask a question, do you have a scale? And they say yes, and we don't follow up with what kind of scale. There's a couple of times I've showed up expecting that the meet director would have a scale, and they literally have a bathroom scale. So I do want to emphasize that when we say, do you have a scale, what we mean is a high-quality calibrated scale that's repeatable and accurate, not a $15 Walmart scale.
In addition, to be in compliance with the rules, that scale needs to have been inspected and calibrated at least once a year. I had a situation, I'm going to throw Adrian under the bus here. I had a situation with a meet that I ran with the Canadian Drug-Free Powerlifting Federation, where we got there, I put a 10-pound kilo plate on the scale just to verify, and it was off. So it's important that you have a high-quality competition-based scale and that's been calibrated in the last year.
Yeah, one of the things I would add with that, in a lot of the cases, a lot of our venues are held, obviously, with people who have athletic connections and things like this. And if you are wanting to run a meet and you're like, wow, I don't know where to get a scale, honestly, go talk if you know anybody at your local high school. I promise you that their wrestling team has an accurate scale. So sometimes you can talk to a school and they will let you borrow their scale.
It's very true. And as long as you brought up schools, let me add this. Finding a school to run your meet in is a great idea. Brett mentioned earlier that the meet director's toolkit contains a copy of our insurance certificate. If you walk into I've done this, you walk into a local school with that in your hand and explain that you're wanting to run a powerlifting meet through a federation that is a nonprofit. I've seen people get the gyms at these schools for as low as $25 for the weekend.
Right, right. And in some cases, what I've seen, and I've even done this myself, I'm able to run meets at certain schools. They don't even charge. We'll have an arrangement where maybe I've been training some of their athletes or something like that, and they get to keep any admission fees and any concession stands throughout the day. And sometimes at meets, I know we had a meet at a church years ago, a big church gymnasium, and all they asked was that they be allowed to open their cafeteria and serve food. And after the fact, they said that that was the most profitable event they had ever had from the cafeteria's perspective, which makes sense. I believe that meet had about 70 lifters plus spectators, and, you know, they had a full cafeteria serving food. So they did really well that day from the concessions.
Yep, I'm not surprised by that at all. In fact, if you walk into a school anyway without the insurance certificate, you'll do okay. Once you show that, the thing that I've run into is they'll want a deposit on their insurance. And since one of the things the Federation provides with your sanction fee is that venue insurance, that goes a long way.
Sure, sure. So another thing I kind of wanted to talk about was, you know, let's say you've got your equipment, you don't know how to build a platform. You know, I do want to emphasize building a platform for a meet is not that difficult. You know, it takes some time, but it basically takes four pieces of plywood, some short screws, and if nothing else, some paint with, I'm not sure what you call it, but the paint that's gritty, the surface paint that actually has traction.
Non-skid.
Right. And some people choose to put carpet or even rubber mats. You can go to most, like Rural Kings or something like that, and you can actually buy what they call horse mats. And those work really well to put down on a platform. They're really thick, solid. You know, I guess if they're good for a horse, they're good for us, right?
Yep, and they're cheap. In fact, I know they're cheap because for my gym, we just bought an additional one yesterday to replace one in there. If you walk in with 220s, you're going to come out with change.
Another thing I want to point out to everyone, you know, when you go to some meets, you see lots of nice equipment. Some meets have really fancy light systems and projectors and all of this. While that's really nice at a meet, when we've got a situation where a meet director doesn't have access to any lights or anything like that for indicating if a lift is good or bad, it is acceptable to raise essentially a white or a red card for each judge, and that can indicate their acceptance or denial of a lift. We usually like it to be lights if we can, but it's perfectly acceptable to use you know, quote unquote flags in place of lights.
And I've had a couple of situations where the light suddenly failed for no apparent reason and we used thumbs. I wouldn't want to do the entire meet that way, but for verifying one lift while we figure out who kicked the plug out, a thumbs up, thumbs down will work just fine.
Right. The other thing I kind of wanted to cover for a first-time meet director is the spotters and loaders you have. Basically, mm-hmm. what you have to consider is whoever loads that bar, if you've got, let's keep the map easy, you've got 10 lifters in a meet, you're going to load that bar 30 times for squats alone. So that's why we like to have six people so you can kind of rotate out. The spotting itself is not too strenuous. It's the loading of the weights continuously that kind of wears people out. And as far as that goes, if you've got inexperienced spotters, that's okay. When we get there, we will go over that with them and what they're supposed to do. And I know for sure me and Bill, we will be quite vocal with the spotters. If we see that they're standing too close or too far away, we always make sure that that the lifter's safety is taken into account. And I rarely, if ever, have actually had a lifter dump a bar where the spotters didn't catch him.
Yep, I haven't either. Another little trick I'm just going to interject right here that I use in my meets is I have the spotters and loaders swap sides after each flight just so they're nice and sore evenly the next day.
I guess, so Bill, maybe you can talk a little bit about the expectations that we would have for the warm-up equipment.
Okay, warm-up equipment is if you have a decent functioning gym, you've got adequate warm-up equipment. I did a meet, doesn't matter where we warmed up with bumper plates. Bumper plates are absolutely fine. I do think you want a bar that is reasonably similar to the bar that's in competition. Texas Power Bars aren't that expensive anymore. In fact, they're on sale this week at Elite Fitness. A decent bar, weights that are reasonably close, you know, and I saw the opposite of this in Scotland. You know, you don't need every single little tiny plate out there for warm-ups, you know. Warm-up is intended to do just that, just warm-up. As far as other equipment, you know, if you've got a decent squat rack or a set of squat racks, that's going to work just fine. In fact, it can work for squats and bench press by just sliding a bench in. CrossFit gyms, for example, are notoriously lacking in bench press benches, but they have plenty of squat racks. So if they have a couple of benches, we can work from that. The more the merrier, of course. That's the biggest thing, you know. It doesn't have to be great equipment. In fact, the equipment that we used to haul around was ancient and painted bright yellow, and it worked just fine.
Okay, and I know one of the things that I get a lot of questions from lifters at a meet is they're oftentimes concerned, will I be able to break an American record at this meet? And really, there's very, very few meets that don't allow records to get broke because of the level of judging. But can you talk a little bit about what kind of judges you need there and how do you go about getting the right judges there?
Sure. There was a change in 2016 where we eliminated the state referee position, and that's now referred to as an in-training. All of those folks should be working actively to be moved up to national-level judge. I've run into a number of situations where an old experienced lifter said, well, I can judge. Well, you can't. Normally what I do when a person contacts me and they want to have a meet, I send out an email to all of the national refs in the area trying to see how many I can get as volunteers. You and I have talked a couple of times about running referee classes the day before a meet. I'd sure like to see us implement that, and that would expand more. But normally, from my end, I try to make sure that the meet director is going to have a sufficient number of referees. If they have a preference or know some refs, then that's fine. But I try to make sure that there's at least a national referee in each chair.
Yeah, the one thing that I would throw out there, and maybe my involvement with the ADFPF goes a couple of years longer than yours, maybe.
More than a couple.
There have been some instances out there where, despite our best attempts, we could not get the right certification level of judges there, at which case you do accept somebody that essentially knows the rules and can do the right level of judging. However, if we know we're going to have that problem, we make it clear at the beginning of the meet or prior on the website that national records cannot be broken or American records cannot be broken at the meet. Typically, the only time I've really had this happen is occasionally we'll allow gyms to have a very small qualification-only meet where the lift only counts for a qualification total or something along that. And we do that because if we're going to have a very small qualification meet, we don't really want to have judges drive in from, you know, 2 or 3 hours away to help with five or six
sure.
guys that are doing a qualification only meet.
Yeah, and let me add, there was a couple of situations in meets that I did where we had two national refs and a third ref who was not certified. And when it came to the record, we made sure that the two national refs were in agreement on the lift before we would consider it. So we looked at that as being just simply two white lights.
Sure. Well, Bill, I don't have anything else. I think we're running out on time. If you've got any final thoughts, welcome them, or we close out.
Okay. Yeah, we're real close to the end here. The only thing I'd like to add is, you know, if you're interested, if you have any interest in running a meet, get a hold of me. We can talk about it. I'd love to see more meets run around the country. I think that you'll find that both Mike and I are pretty easy guys to talk to, and we would love to give you a hand with doing it. So I guess that's it. Next week, we're going to take the week off. We both have some stuff we've got to get taken care of. So we won't be here next week, but we will be the following. You can listen to our show live every Sunday night here on Blog Talk Radio. We post the link on Facebook and our website. The ADFPF has a weekly email update on our website, so you can subscribe to that by scrolling down to the bottom of the event calendar page at adfpf.net/meetcalendar. Actually, that's no longer meet calendar. Let me correct that. adfpf.net/eventcalendar. We'd also like to encourage our listeners to support questions to us based on the current week's theme. We'll answer as many as we can at the end of the show. Send your questions to us on Facebook. Facebook page, again, is facebook.com/ADFPF. So until next week, I'm Bill Sias. Remember, the bar is loaded.
And I'm Mike Stagg. Stay strong.